Stacey and Craig from Code and Theory, there are three things that I'm going to struggle to do today. One of them is to summarize your careers because Stacey, Nike for a decade in China and the US. You worked as an MD at a venture studio. You're now at Code and Theory. It's going to be impossible to do this in 45 minutes to an hour. So I'm going to ask you one question in about 5 minutes time. Craig, equally really hard. I kind of feel though with your background, because of your design digital background, it feels like you've always had to be fighting a case for digital, whatever that is. And it's why I wanted to ask you that question, because I feel like if someone goes into their career being the digital guy, whether it's working at VMLY&R or at Rap, going, no, this is really good. It's a website. Yeah. What's that? Yeah. I want to know who was the first person that made you feel like you had talent?
It's a great question. Look, yes, I've always had to swim upstream. I think part of my career trajectory was very intentional in terms of needing to sort of Trojan horse myself in cultures that weren't as, it's not that they weren't as accepting to digital, but I think similar to what we're experiencing now with AI, there was just a lot of pushback because people weren't native. They weren't comfortable in that world. I would say the first person, when I got my first, it wasn't really my first job, but it was sort of like my first official job in the industry. Before that, I was kind of like this rogue, you know, kind of like artist, was at Firstborn. And at the time, one of the founders was their chief creative officer by the name of Vasily Slouchevsky. And I had never met anyone as talented as him in terms of someone who just understood digital so natively, so fluidly, so naturally. It just, I mean, he was, and we were known for it. I mean, we had become famous because he had instilled in us this level of comfort within digital where we could do anything. You know, there were no rules. There were no boundaries. There's no wireframes. Like, it was like, you know, and I think he was the first person to really instill in me the confidence of just knowing that I understood the medium well enough to consider myself a master of it, you know, or at least an aspiring master. And I think that his confidence in me at the time really gave me the confidence to go into the big holding companies and be able to go toe-to-toe with anyone there and be like, sorry, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, this is the future. This is where it's going. This is what needs to happen. And I could tell you, you know, I've had really good interactions with some legends, you know, people like Tony Granger, people like, you know, like some of the biggest CCOs out there that you can imagine. And they all had a tremendous respect for that level of confidence in which they felt like I had enough conviction in what I was talking about and believed in it enough for them to also believe in it. And in many cases, I was the guy in the room that they would point to and be like, listen to this guy, you know? And even at VML, I think Debbie Van Dieven put a lot of trust in me where when we would have, you know, big global councils, many times she would turn and be like, Craig, what do you think? Like, is this right? Is this going, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, Vass really to me was sort of the godfather of it all from a creative standpoint. And his confidence in me, and he was the first person to really make me feel like I was like, okay, I can do this.
I love that.
I know my shit.
It's funny, if you think about like how, the thing I really want to get into today is like Code and Theory. I genuinely believe most creative people at any ad land agency or wherever they've come from would be interested in working in this kind of business. But 10, 15 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case, right? It would be the thing at the end of the deck where it's like, do this thing. It's kind of cool. It's like, oh, fuck, that comes after the TV. See, like, whatever. And that's flipping. Before we come on to Code and Theory, because like, I look at both of your careers and I go, you could have gone anywhere. You know, Stacey, Nike, over a decade, taking it to China. I mean, like, there's so much in your world that I'd love to uncover, because you could have gone anywhere and went to Coding Theory. So before I ask you why and how it was positioned to you guys, mm-hmm. I'd love to know, I mean, this is going to be hard. How do we summarize your career in one question? But can you think of a moment it doesn't have to be at Nike, it could be anywhere, that you felt like identified you as a leader?
Yeah, there are many moments, you're right, but I think it's always been about going to uncommon land. I used to call it infiltrating, okay. but that sounds a little bit evil. but I've always been someone that likes to go to a place that I don't know and sort of like bring back some uncommon experience yeah. or uncommon knowledge or, you know, some little observation that, you know, seems insignificant at the time, yeah. but actually is a big deal, and see what I can do with it or how I can use it. So first for me, that was going from marketing into strategy at a company where marketing is the, you know, the cool kids at the lunchroom table, yeah. if you will, or moving to China to understand what a different pace of growth is like, or then going into the world of venture and trying to see what, you know, the owner's mentality and the boardroom tables around certain growth and traction and, you know, captivating culture decisions really are looking at and, you know, how those decisions get made. So it's always been like trying to see one thing, but from as many different angles as possible.
I get that.
It's like driven my leadership style.
Yeah, it definitely seems like that. From all the places that you've been to, it's like you can tell there's a thing driving that, and it sounds like it's curiosity. Like, I could stay here and be happy and learn and keep on learning at Nike. You'd learn a whole load of things now, right? If you were still there. But it seems like there's this drive to go, what do I not know? Mm-hmm. And where can I take the thing that I don't know and then use that to impact somewhere on? I mean, going to a venture studio, I can imagine that was an intimidating place to go, like, and then tell them what their strategy was going forward for these brands that they're putting God knows how much money in. Was that challenging, that year and a half? Yeah.
It was really hard. Yeah. Mostly because I was leaving a space where I had kind of grown tired of the pretense.
In what way?
You know, there's a lot of fanfare around marketing and yeah. advertising and creativity and big ideas. And I think a lot of that is, you know, at certain times a little bit smoke and mirrors or like, you know, people that are propping each other up because that's what we're trained to do. You know, I'm as good a hype woman as any. So I think I wanted to get to a place that felt more serious. Like, okay. you know, there's actually there's a there.
Yeah.
And let's figure out the there before we talk about how we're going to talk about it and yeah. how we're going to, you know, make people excited about it. But when I actually got there, I was like, oh, this is actually even more pretense
yeah.
because to convince people, you know, to inject funds into something that really hasn't been proven yet is almost like the ultimate marketing. Like
yeah.
in a lot of cases, you can't even hold the thing in your hand yet. So you really have to make the vision that you have in your head as a founder or, you know, as someone who's trying to work on strategy with that founder, apparent and very vivid inside the head of another person without having anything to point to.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was challenging in ways that I didn't expect it to be.
Yeah.
And I also had just come back from 3 years in China where I had gotten not used to, but was like using different parts of my brain that I think very much had grown comfortable in the, you know, kind of like, I guess, corporate capital I had built up
yeah.
before that. And so coming back to the United States, even just in general, was way harder for me than I expected it to be, mostly just because my mental patterns had grown in a different direction.
Yeah. I imagine that as like, there's this whole debate going on. I saw a CMO yesterday about being in marketing at a brand now. It used to, for the last decade, it felt like it was very arithmetic, media centric. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, we're seeing that shift. And we're now going, actually, a CMO needs to be just as creative as they are analytical. In fact, mm-hmm. looking at what's happening to Nike now, perhaps an over-index in being too metric focused mm-hmm. means that you lose the thing, the very thing that made this thing distinctive and different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Is that, I want to kind of get into the why of coding theory, but is that why, was that the curiosity that was driving you? Okay, this can't just be a metric focused thing.
I mean, in my like soul searching time after just leaving Nike, part of this was the timing of it, but there were so many companies that were doing the dual CMO thing mm-hmm. where one was the performance CMO and one was the brand CMO. And I just, every time I spoke to a recruiter about that was like, this goes against like my very nature as a person. Like I'm someone who I am, my dad is Black, my mom is Chinese.
Yeah.
They could not be more opposite in culture and personality and sort of like the social systems and norms that govern them. Mm-hmm. And I just always grew up thinking, having this both and mentality yeah. about everything and like, you know, seeing everything as a false dichotomy. Mm. Otherwise I shouldn't exist as a person. So it's been like it's my life mission to yeah. prove, to find false dichotomies and show people like, this is actually not a decision you need to make. It's not an either or.
Yeah.
And so when I started getting those calls, I was like, I don't feel good about that. Like, I don't think that that's the future of marketing, is to have, you know, these people that are like constantly in a power struggle.
Yeah.
And it's really honestly fun now to see that starting to get played out, where, you know, it is, a lot of people are realizing, yeah, actually you need to be both and everything else too. Yeah.
Good luck.
As a CMO. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, I think I get, when I look at code and theory, it's like systems science, well, like art and science at the same time. Like from the outside looking in, you go, okay, fine. There's the half, you know, engineers, half creativity kind of way it's positioned. How was it positioned to you guys? And what was it about it that made you go, this sounds like the thing I want to be doing? Because yeah. I can imagine it was probably quite hard for you to be convinced to go agency, and for you as well, to leave the WPP world.
I think for me, it was, I think similar to Stacey, for me, it was something that I had been searching for a very long time, because I had always been very aware of the bifurcation within the industry between brand and experience, to the point where at VML, like that was literally what we were selling in a separate, it was like BX and CX, you know? And it was like these two things. And we tried to bring them as close together as possible, but never shall the two meet because of the lack of, I think, openness within the industry for people to understand that it's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about a brand being an expectation and you think about an experience being the thing that you set with the expectation, and they're two ends of the same continuum, and my brain had always worked like that. And so part of my own personal frustration in my career was, these two things have to get together, like bring them together. And the way agencies are set up and the way brands are set up, it's very bifurcated.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, code and theory represented the first time that I saw within a single place that these two entities were actually intentionally put together. Like, not just accidentally, but like, we're intentionally putting these two like disparate worlds and trying to like figure out how to make that tension work.
Yeah.
And that's where the beauty is, you know? So for me, it was just sort of like, been waiting for this my whole career. And, you know, and I think that right now we're on that path to truly like realize, because not just because of us, I think the world is starting to realize. I think people are starting to wake up and starting to understand that, you know, the it is truly a customer-led world.
Yeah.
You know, and for years I've been, every single time someone in a room would be like, let me see the customer journey. I'm like, it's not a customer journey. It's the customer's apostrophe S journey. Mm-hmm. It's theirs. It's not yours. You don't know what it is. You can't define it because they are gonna, right, they're gonna do whatever they want. And that was the premise of digital.
Yeah.
They can now do whatever they wanted. So for me, you know, that was what drew me to Code and Theory in terms of being able to flex both sides of my brain. And I've, right, and I've always straddled those two sides. It was always, you know, when I was on the campaign side and I was doing Super Bowl spots, I was hanging out with this group of people and they were a very different group of people than the folks who I was making apps and experiences with. Mm-hmm. Those were the nerdy, heady, eccentric, curious, and the other more like confident and, yeah, and you know, outgoing. And I was just, and I think I'm still obsessed with bringing those two worlds together because I do think they belong together.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, when we come up with an idea, if the idea doesn't have tension, it's not a good idea because there's no opposing forces there to really create something interesting.
Yeah.
And so for me, that is absolutely what Code and Theory is about.
And is that how it was positioned to you as well, Casey?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, to be honest, I ended up here by a fluke. My mom was very ill and she was in a hospital in New Jersey. And so I was picking up any unknown caller that was with the same area code.
Oh my God.
It just so happens the head of recruiting for Code and Theory has that same area code.
Wow.
And that's how we started talking. And I told her that right off the bat.
This is a mistake, by the way.
But then she went on to say, oh yeah, we've tried like a few different people to lead our brand strategy practice. And it's like, we've either gone too traditional or too wacky out of the box, yeah, future forward. And anytime, again, someone positions something to me as like, we've been forcing ourselves to make this choice, but it really isn't a choice, I'm like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
So that was our first conversation. When I first met Mike Treff, the CEO, I was like, listen, going to an agency has never been something that's been on my dream board. And he was like, that's exactly why we're putting this together. And so it was the phrase tech-infused marketing that I think he used that really kind of hooked me. But I ended up telling a story to him in that time of when I was in Nike in China, we had a vision that we had workshopped with an agency that was painting this picture of sort of like customer, consumer-centric journey, lifestyle, mm-hmm, you know, membership-centric, LTV, kind of brand plan. And we had that vision for, I don't know, 3 years or so, 5 years maybe. And then when it came time to implement it was, mm-hmm, when everyone realized, oh, well, actually, like, our data systems are not set up to support this. The way our teams are structured, like, doesn't support us even thinking in this way. And then, like, even our accounting principles, the way we count revenue is, like, not gonna ever make this real. And so there was a lot of just, you know, the stuff that marketers don't like to think about, yeah, but a lot of infrastructure work that had to be done that took someone who understood what was the vision we were trying to bring to life, but also could get in the weeds of like, okay, how do we need to set up, you know, these data lakes and, you know, whatnot. And so, you know, it took like a good, I don't know, 5-6 years between the vision being crafted and, you know, then the big four consulting firms coming in and pitching the implementation work. And I was like, there's just so much that's been wasted in that time. And I was like watching all of it happen kind of from the sidelines. And it just, I don't know, to be able to save that time and wasted energy headaches and people banging their heads up against a wall, to me is something that I would like to prove that it can be done.
I love that your brain is like, there's a problem. I like it. That's like, that's the attraction for you, which is, I guess, why you're so good at what you do. How does a customer come into Code and Theory then? So like, what door do they walk through? If they're, you know, we can use Nike, I guess, as an example. What's happening right now as a trigger for Nike to go, let's call Code and Theory right now?
Right. Look, I think what we pride ourselves on is not necessarily doing it. We don't want to do everything. As a matter of fact, we prefer not to, you know, most agencies is sort of like, how do we get the largest share of the brand, right? Organic growth, under the guise of organic growth, right? I think we love the idea of understanding how to help our clients orchestrate a very, very, very complex marketing ecosystem.
Okay.
Right? And so where most agencies are looking at, you know, a specific audience or a specific channel, we're looking at the whole thing. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out, like, what is the ecosystem? And it's never the same at any given time, right? Like, what is the ecosystem for this particular brand right now? And how do they communicate a very clear, concise message expressed very differently across many, many, many different channels, right? Across audiences that are not single identities, but a spectrum of identities, right? We're playing 5D chess, right? Everyone else is like, make it simple and simple idea. Mm-hmm. And like, no, like we're in the matrix. We are in the matrix. And if you're a brand that is really struggling with how to conduct yourself in a very complicated world and things seem alien and things seem really hard, you call us and we figure it out. What I love about being 50% creative and 50% tech is the tech part of us is biased towards action. They want to make shit. They want to build stuff. The creative part is we've got our heads in the clouds, right? Yeah. We're thinking big. We're thinking broad. We're really trying to, like, you know, Stacey and I say this, you know, we're not trying to think outside of the box. There is no box. There's no box. It doesn't exist, right? I keep using Matrix examples, but it's true. And the idea that we can bring these two worlds together is why clients call us. And I think in many cases, you know, we get contacted and clients don't even know what to ask. They may say, I want a website. What does that mean? I don't understand my digital ecosystem. Or they may say, I need an app. What does that mean? I need to completely reinvent my whole way of doing commerce. I need a platform. What does that mean? I want to build a community and I don't know how, right? So, you know, they don't have the language because they truly don't understand something that is highly, highly complicated. And I think agencies, legacy agencies, or let's just call it Madison Avenue, was always about the simplification of everything because they had three channels, right? It was always like TV, radio, and print, and right? Simple.
But I could never say this word, but I wouldn't even say simplification. It's like obfuscation.
Obfuscation, exactly. It is that.
Is that a word? It should be a word if it's not. Obfuscation. It is. I like this word.
It's like, how can we obscure what's actually happening?
Yeah.
Maybe we don't understand what's actually happening.
Exactly. And so they call us because we kind of understand what's happening. And it's not because we're smarter or, you know, we're more insightful. It's because we look at both the medium and the message together. We're not just thinking, you know, let's just do a Super Bowl spot for the sake of doing a glossy Super Bowl spot that is completely overlooking every fear that lives within the lives of our audience because brand safety, I don't know, whatever, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I think what we pride ourselves on doing is like human truth. Like what is the human, what is actually happening in that place. And I do think our clients really love going on that journey because it helps them better understand their own business, mm-hmm. right? Like if you're making things obscure, you're actually preventing yourself from understanding the business that you're in. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that our clients oftentimes feel like the value we bring to them beyond, look, I think we're some of the best designers and developers in the world. I mean, our work stands on its own. We do fucking awesome work. But above and beyond that, the value we bring is that clarity.
Right.
Right? So we're moving away from this idea of simplification because the world is not simple to this idea of clarity.
Yeah. Right? Simplex.
Simplex. That's a nice new word.
So many new words I'm learning here today.
Simplex.
If you've made, someone said this to me the other day, so this is why it's on my mind, okay. But it's similar to you look in the mirror after couple decades, and suddenly you realize, oh, I've put a lot of weight on. That's what's happening with a lot of, yeah. I think, CMOs and businesses right now, because if you've made a career out of sort of ignoring how the sausage gets made and what like the supply chain of your brand looks like, when you actually try to go back and tackle some of these issues that require getting messy and getting into the weeds of, you know, the call center and where does the data from the call center go before it gets to me in the form of this like well-packaged soundbite in a deck, you actually need to undo so much to get to the real meat of the solution. And I think a lot of people are having a hard time with, okay, well, where do I even intervene or start in that process? And that's what we like. I see our role as Code in Theory is just like a founder would. Mm. We are going at the system part of your ecosystem to go find and exploit positive feedback loops that exist in connections between different channels, different brand surfaces, different interaction points. Not saying that we work on a system, but actually just standing up more and more channels that are making the messiness more and more complex. And that's the obfuscation that I think a lot of people are realizing in real time.
You know that saying, nobody gets fired for hiring IBM?
That's right.
I feel like if I had this, you know, if I was a marketer and my boss had told me to go and, you know, find an agency, da da da, and I had this conversation, I can see how it would be easier to go, nope, Ogilvy, sorry, that sounds like really.
Oh yeah,
I just came here for an ad.
All the time,
every day, and I really have a lot of respect for the clients who are able to recognize, or at least have the integrity, to say, you know what. I'm going to completely ignore every reality in the world, and I'm going to go with a brand name. Not that we're not a brand name. I think we're pretty cool. But go with a more traditional agency. To your point, no one gets fired for hiring Ogilvy. Yeah. I love Ogilvy. I love them. But they should. They really should. Because, you know, when you want to make a really nice Super Bowl spot, when you want to do, you know, Michael Cera and like this amazing, that's beautiful work. That's really good work. But it doesn't address the inherent problems in the business. And I think that, I think we're just so radically honest and we're sort of forced to look at the dirty, messy parts of the business. And we're okay with it. I think we enjoy it, you know, because it's real. And not a lot of clients, I think, are up for that. I think they're not, like, it's hard. It's scary. It's intimate. It's vulnerable. It's, there's so many things that, you know, you have to really come to terms with. And that's why we're not for everyone.
But we do actually make it fun because we, like the humans involved, we actually like it. You listen to both of our origin stories, it's like that's the type of stuff we gravitate towards. So I do think it makes a difference when you have people who actually want to be working on those messy problems and want to be taking really complex things and making sense of them and trying to figure out how they can versus being forced to it. Yeah, the saying that I've been using a lot lately is like the number one way to guarantee you are not going to have organizational change is to title the slide organizational change or here's our change roadmap or here's our transformation roadmap. That is the, like, no one's even going to pay attention to what the visual on the slide is after that.
Right.
Like, why? It's already like, I don't want to do that. That doesn't sound fun. So we make it sound fun. We used to have a saying at Nike a lot of the times, internally, I hope this isn't, I don't think I'm giving anything away, but we used to sometimes say Jetsons on the outside, Flintstones on the inside.
Tell me more.
You know, there's a lot of flash and whiz bang that happens that is, you know, inherent in how you bring a brand to market. But the actual things that are the duct tape and the spit and glue and whatnot that is happening internally, especially when you start to talk about like last mile teams, like the retail teams or the stock room of the retail stores, that type of thing, it does get messy.
Yeah.
And we would just, you know, we would all have this agreement whenever that phrase, you know, was spoken, like, yeah, we just have to make this happen and we have to make it look good because we're Nike. And I think that being able to recognize when that's going on, maybe even when the client doesn't want to say it in that way, and create a pull for the rest of the organization to want to come along and get messy and bring, you know, whatever this integrated vision is to life, or breaking out of our silos vision is to life, is what we bring to the table because we actually like it.
Right.
It's not like, you know, how are we going to create these governance and regulation rules? And, you know, it's just that kind of stuff is what turns people off.
Yeah. Whenever you tell that story about Jetsons and Flintstones, it always brings me back to this time when I was a kid, when I remember I first watched the Flintstones and Fred gets in the car, but you see his feet going.
Yeah.
And that's
exactly
what it is.
Yeah. Why are you in a car? What are you doing?
Exactly.
You're just running.
Yep.
With a frame or a chassis. Right? Yeah.
I mean, this is all a big tech too, by the way. Like I don't know if it's PC to still say Mechanical Turks, but like there is a lot today even that's still running by Mechanical Turks.
Totally.
I mean, that's all that phrase really means. It's it's the marketing version of that, but we like to actually go in and figure out a way that he doesn't have to move his feet so fast, as a first step. And then eventually he actually can press a pedal and be in a car.
It's a good analogy.
Yeah.
I want to just quickly go to AI. I heard a term today, which was ROAI. Have you heard of this? Return on investment with AI, right?
Of course.
So you guys are...
That term was inevitable.
Yeah, it's going to happen, right? Again, how do I prove there's ROAI, right? Which I think kind of just means like how many humans are you cutting to make sure this thing works, which is bizarre.
Unfortunately.
I think a lot of people that will be listening to this, there'll be lots of different camps. One of the camps will be, I'm a traditional strategy director or creative director or design director sitting at a McCann or even an RGA or somewhere like that.
Mm.
What do I need to do to evolve myself and to make sure that I'm not left behind and I'm remaining relevant or, you know, moving to a place that is going to become valued and relevant?
Mm.
So it's kind of a two-part question really, which is what value have you discovered with AI commercially?
Yeah.
And then the second question is, and if you were a person that was 10 years back from where you are now, what games would you be playing? What things would you be learning and looking at to future-proof your value to those brands in the future or agencies?
That's a good question. I think we are inherently like embracing it because that's our world.
Mm.
You know, I think AI has actually, for us as an agency, it's almost like messianic in a way, because we've been wanting to do all the things that AI allows you to do, but it was like it used to cost $1 billion and you could never do it. It was Mechanical Turk, right? And so I think for the first time, it's like we can do all the things.
Mm.
Like there's no idea that we pitch that we can't do at scale, at cost, at speed.
it's amazing. It just unlocks everything. It really does. It unlocks everything because that's our world, right? So when you think about creating an experience that either saves someone time or spends time with someone, you can now infuse that with the sort of, I would say, preemptive, you know, measures that we always wished we could implement within our ideas, right? We often talk about this idea of like personalization is based on old data. Yeah. How can you personalize something for someone not knowing what they're about to do, but basing it on what they already did? Mm. It's kind of counterintuitive when you think about it. When you hear it in a room, it's like, oh, wow, I'll take two. But actually, it's very counterintuitive. And so AI allows us to sort of preempt experiences and build experiences that become less reactive and more more anticipatory, yeah. Right? Like we're starting to see what the next best behavior or the next thing that the consumer wants based on what they did,
yeah.
Right? And so for us, it unlocks potential, like all the potential we've ever wanted. And at least for me, I know, like, as the guy who is always presenting the ideas that can never get made, I'm a kid in a candy store. I feel like I'm 21 again, and I've got this new exuberance in my soul because it's like, wow, ooh, I wasn't wrong. I knew we could do this stuff. I knew it was possible. It just wasn't there,
yeah.
You know, and AI allows that to happen. And then I think from those folks who are worried, use it. Mm. Just use it. Use it every single day.
Yep.
Use it. Use it to write your emails. Use it to come up with concepts. You just back in that. Look, 20 years ago when Google first came out, everyone's like, "Oh, you must have Googled that." Yeah. What? And what? Did I break the universe? Like, it's a tool.
Yeah.
I did Google it, you know? And remember, like, people would be like, "Oh, you must have Googled that. You couldn't have known it." I didn't know it. I Googled it and now I do. Same thing with AI. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, use it. You came down like 2 weeks ago. I remember, I think you were up at Stagwell at a workshop or something. And I had spent the afternoon, it was the day the new version of Runway came out, and I had spent the afternoon literally teaching myself how to use it. And I created this music video that I was working on, and literally from nothing, like I had this idea. I'm like, okay, give myself a brief. And I was like, okay, here's the idea, great. And within 2 hours, I was like running around the agency, like, guys, look what I made. Like, look what I just fucking made. And I was like so happy. And I think if you're a creative and it doesn't excite you that you can take what's in here and put it here in a matter of seconds. Mm. And then of course you can shape it in the craft and all this stuff we like to say over and over again, craft, 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 right? go for it. Like, do as much as you want. But our business has always been creativity at speed. I don't care who you ask. I don't care. Mm. It's creativity at speed. We create things that have to conduct themselves within culture. Culture is faster than it's ever been, ever in the ever, and it's not getting slower. Like right now is the slowest it will ever be.
Mm.
You know, in a minute, it's going to be faster. And so if creativity at speed is the game, then I'm sorry, guys. Those folks who want to languish in the idea, that's not what this business is about, you know? And so use it. Just use it. Just use it.
I think the flip side of what you're saying, so yes, the speed of manifestation, like you're no longer held back by your body, your mechanics to get what's in your brain out of your brain and into something tangible that people can react to. Yes, 100%. Yeah. And I love when Craig makes something and he's excited about it and is like, you know, running around our floor wanting to show everyone. Like that makes me so excited. I think the other side of that equation that's inherent in your question about ROAI is that it's forcing a lot of people who never really forced themselves with enough rigor to think about the business model of what they're marketing to now think about the business model of what they're marketing. Like, you know, whether it was ROAS back in the day or, you know, ROMI more lately or now ROAI, it's you're thinking about the cost side of that value equation as well, in a big way, because this stuff is expensive. Yeah. You know, it's a big investment to make when you haven't really proven what the ROAI is going to be yet. And so I think from a, this is like a very strategy answer, but we used to have a saying in Silicon Valley when I worked in the venture space that if you want to build a product for everyone, you have to speak to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people try to skip that step because in the Mechanical Turk's age, that was actually quite cumbersome and expensive and time consuming. But now the reason why I get excited about it is you actually can speak to everyone. You can have lots of conversations at once. Maybe they're simulated people that you're speaking to, but they're you can design it so that it's representative of exactly the everyone that you want to speak to that is right for your brand. And I think that aspect of, you know, it's, again, it's not the sexy stuff that most marketers want to talk about, but of de-risking all of the experiments that you're putting out there, or maybe even saving yourself the time of having to fully produce and put out an experiment, because you can filter out things that, you know, people just already are not going to react to well because you've had this conversation or you've had this large focus group running all the time. That to me is really, really exciting. Like I remember, I literally was in a role in corporate strategy 10 years ago that internally we called the director of listening, because really it was the best job ever. My job was to like fly around the world and speak to runners on behalf of Nike Running and just like get to know what their problems are and what their lifestyles look like and, you know, how can the brand serve them better. And I was a human that used to like literally have to go to these places, hire an interpreter if it was a different language, find a space, like have a recruiter that's gathering all the people. I would go on runs with people, and that was time consuming. It was great. It was fun. Yeah. I loved it. I would go do that again in a heartbeat. But now you can do that at scale all the time. And so if you're someone working in the creative industry and you're not doing that, you have no excuse. You're not going to have a job in 3 months' time. Like it's just, I do think that that situation is dire. I don't see why people aren't more urgently curious about some of these things that they can be using.
Yeah, nice. Going back to coding theory very quickly, because I promised myself I would ask this question. I ask this question a lot to people. It's quite a strategy question, actually. If everything that you're planning with coding theory goes to plan and goes well, what will be different about either your lives or the business in 12 months' time?
I think we will be seeing a very, I don't know if it's even still going to be called the advertising industry, but I think that we will lead the way of a new face, new business model, new partnership model for what the ad industry can look like in a year's time. I think we'll have paved that road, so to speak.
Nice.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of what brought me to coding theory really was understanding that as an industry, we're on the precipice of a new day. And, you know, I do think that a lot of what I personally witnessed and went through, especially at WPP, where, you know, we were dismantling the biggest brands, J. Walter Thompson. Yeah. I literally would go and like dismantle Wonderman, you know, I mean, you're talking about the biggest, most legacy brands in advertising. And, you know, for me, that was a very clear signal that everything's changing.
Yeah.
The whole game, the whole thing. And so I agree with Stacey in regards to the fact that part of what we're doing is not just the work, but really trying to reinvent the entire model.
Yeah.
You know, and I think within Stagwell, you know, Coding Theory was the first acquisition. And like, we're very much, you know, helping to sort of shape the trajectory of, you know, Stagwell being primarily a technology
company versus a accounting firm, right? and being beholden to its agencies versus agencies being beholden to the holding company. And so the idea of us like flipping the whole model and thinking about, you know, new partnerships, efficiency multipliers when it comes to like new revenue models, you know, everything. We want to reinvent everything.
Wow.
And not because we can, but because it's the right time.
Yeah.
It's the right time, you know, and much respect to Sir Martin and the Ogilvies and the Burnbacks and go to Madison Avenue. Show me what's left.
Have you guys seen that book, The Madison Avenue Makeover with Huge?
Yep.
Yeah. I read it.
Sitting on my desk. Yep.
It's interesting.
It's interesting, and it's the intention behind it is right. Mm-hmm. But to the point of heading into the mess, the execution of things matters too.
Yeah.
I will put it's longer term than a year probably, but I'll put a KPI on everything that we just said.
Okay.
I think if Code and Theory is successful in what we are setting out to do, it won't be the CFO that is tapped to be the next generation CEO of Fortune 100's brands and businesses. It'll be CMOs.
Right.
We won't be having this conversation of, oh, the CIO is the new CMO, because they're just one person. If we do our jobs right, that's one person who is informed with that level of intelligence, that level of understanding of how to set up the technological infrastructure of a company such that their vision can come to life, and has the vision and understands how to execute that vision in culture. CEO is all day.
100%.
Wow.
Because they now are in the matrix.
Yeah.
Seriously, because they now understand. CEOs inherently are the leaders that understand the most complicated parts of a business.
Mm.
So our clients becoming the now understanding the most complicated parts of the business, which is the world in which it lives in, right? That's what I think that's so well said. I couldn't agree more. I think that our clients now become the CEO and not 18-month, you know, on the clock, like,
not at the kids' table anymore.
No,
right.
And that's amazing. That's one of my favorite things I've actually probably heard this year. And it makes so much sense. Like the beginning of this conversation, we were speaking about the right and the left brain. And it's funny, you just mentioned CFO, Martin Sorrell was a CFO. I'm sure that was wrapped up in there. And again, like, would a CFO run a company like Code and Theory? Probably not now, right? You've got to understand way more than just spreadsheets and complexities of everything that goes on. I'm wary of our time. Yes. I've got one more question I want to ask you. It's a fluffy, nice question, so you guys can spend some time on this.
We don't like fluff.
Okay, sorry. Right.
Can't already
guys,
tell.
Lovely to meet you both.
Seriously, really serious, really human. We want to get real.
I've got
a bad
fluff
measure of you guys. Okay, so two-part question, one for Craig, one for Stacey. So 21-year-old Stacey is there. Entering the industry today hasn't got to be industry focused. It could be anything focused, really. But what would you say to that version of yourself now?
Go for it. If you see an idea, make it real. You have all the tools at your disposal. I think I wasted a lot of time in my career, and I see this in a lot of people, even in founders of startups, that are really just looking for validation.
Yeah.
A lot of people out there raising venture capital that really what they're raising is validation.
Therapist.
Yeah.
Way cheap.
And so I, you know, knowing that now, knowing that that's all really anyone is searching for in a lot of these places, I had a ton of ideas back then that I'm like, man, wish I had.
Go for it.
Yeah,
ignore that imposter, that person.
Just go for it.
I love that. Craig?
Same question?
Yeah.
I was pretty reckless at 21. So
keep on wrecking.
I think so. You know, I sort of, and I still do to a degree, you know, maintain a certain level of being just naive because I choose to want to nurture my creativity and my curiosity more than I do the other stuff. And I think at 21, I might have worried too much about that, like over-indexing on that. Like, you're too curious, you're too in the clouds, you're too, you know, kind of out there. And I probably spent many years stressing about it. You know, on the outside, I was like, oh, let's go, let's do it. But on the inside, I was like, oh, shit. Like, you know, people probably think I'm dangerous, you know. And I would just tell myself to not even worry about that.
Yeah. Like,
I think I overthought it for way too long. I don't think it went away till I even turned 40.
Wow.
So like I lived with a lot of struggle for many years where I knew who I was and the value I brought to the table. And many people actually said to me, like, just do what you're doing. Like, don't worry. But, you know, you worry because you overthink. And but I think I would probably tell myself, like, yeah, don't, you don't need to like think about that stuff. Would have saved myself like a lot of stress.
Yeah.
Can I give one more?
Absolutely.
I think you're reminding me of this, but I think a lot of people right now roll their eyes at the fact that there are a lot of young people who say that they want to be an influencer or a creator or in China, a KOL as their career. And, you know, they're like, that's not realistic. And like, you need to have, you know, kind of better goals. I actually think that if I were 21 now, that is 1,000% what I would be doing. Because we are in the age of not e-commerce, but me-commerce. And I think the quicker you can understand how to monetize yourself, regardless of what role or job title you have in your 9-to-5, but like understanding that you are your own business model and like working on the business model of you, I think that the creator life and the creator economy is the best, most hands-on way to actually gain experience doing that. And I think a lot of people, you know, yes, I understand why kids are being told, you know, like, don't climb up that skyscraper and, you know, do something dangerous and whatnot. But the kids that are really understanding how to stand up these multi-channel, multi-revenue stream businesses around who they are, around having figured out who they are, and even if who they are changes next week, that they are like, you know, constantly innovating their business model against that. I actually think that that's great experience that will last you a long time in whether it's the corporate world or the agency world, et cetera. I wish more people
were okay with that.
We're okay with that, yeah.
I think it's a really good point.
Every person who's ever worked for me will know, like, I always, my speech, my first speech is, you're here because you made it here. Obviously, you're talented. What I care about is your personal brand. Like, who are you? Like, who do you bring into a room? When I tell, you know, if I'm talking to a client and I'm promising them you, what am I promising? What am I selling? You know, and I think that it's so, it's so true. It's like, a personal brand, when we talk about AI and like at some point, all of this is going to be automated.
Yeah.
Seriously. Like we see it. It could be now. The reason it isn't because we're soft, but it will all be automated. And the only thing left is who's walking the idea into the room.
Yeah.
Who's defending it? Who's presenting it? Whose point of view? And yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that people, you know, we talk about, and I think, you know, what you're saying illustrates the complexity we talk about. So when we say it's a complex, what these kids are doing is their version of a lemonade stand.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What was once, and so that's the perfect analogy. What was once, hey, let's put up a cardboard sign, have a lemon glass of lemonade, a glass and lemonade, and say $1 is now multi-channel, omni-channel, changing, commerce-driven. So is a lemonade stand, but it was one-dimensional. This is, think about it.
Yeah.
Like,
That's amazing.
And I think the term personal brand is what has, I don't know, for whatever reason, made people turn up their noses at that, because it's only addressing the content side of that equation. Yeah.
Right.
And actually, I think what these creators have figured out, that it's the commerce side of that equation, and them doing business model innovation on themselves. Right. That is the real value that they're bringing into any sort of business situation. But, you know, when people say personal brand, and then they're like, you know, that's not, you're not really going to help me and, you know, my business here at the agency. Yeah. Like, that's the part that people are just not getting. So maybe it's that we need to change that phrase. Maybe it's like, it's your personal business, not your personal
store. Like,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Understanding what's in your store as an individual is,
I love that.
Is so key.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of the, you know, applying the whole stoicism element to that as well. Like, understand it before you go out. Like, and you're right. Life's transient, things are transient, right? Start it, you might figure out actually the person you're putting out to the world is changing, and that's also okay.
Because
I think we're so like, you got to etch in stone who this, you know, figure out who you are, what's your passion, what's your purpose.
But that's
going to change.
That, I think, is the downfall of agencies, is you will always be the door you walked in from, right? And it's like, today I'm an art director. Tomorrow I'm a strategist.
Yep.
The next day I've decided I'm going to be an account person because I realized that I grew into a point in which I can manage a relationship, you know, and then tomorrow I'm a technologist.
Yep.
And the agency world has just never allowed that. It was
the KPI of ad agencies is nostalgia.
Yeah, it's true.
Really? It's true. About pointing to work you did in the past.
Right. Yes.
And Pharrell said something on his Instagram once that I can never seem to find because I really want to like quote it and properly cite it. But he said, did should never be better than doing or you're done.
Nice.
Wow. I think you smashed that.
And
that's not how it went. That's how it should have gone.
No, that's
and in agency land, it's actually quite the opposite. It's look at what I've done over here. I did this commercial 10 years ago. You remember that? That's me.
Right.
So you want to hire me, right?
Right?
And that's not, if we do our jobs right, that's not going to be the KPI of this industry anymore. Because it already is not the KPI of business. Yeah. We know that.
Right.
Guys, you've smashed this. This has been one of my favorite conversations I've had on this podcast.
You. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been incredible.
Once you get us going, it's hard to.
Yeah, you guys killed that.
I could go for hours.
Wow, thank you so much. Awesome. Wow. Well done. Thank you.
Thank you. This was good.
So many incredible sound bites in that I can't wait to.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Well done. How did you guys feel that night? Okay. How do you feel it went?
I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.